Welcome back to Joe College Radio on this post-Bedlam weekend. I'm Miles King. Joined with me, as always, Jordan Linderman. Jordan, joining us by speakerphone today. Thanks for coming back on the pod again.
Yeah, you got it. It makes me sound like I'm on some sort of official business. I couldn't sit down and dedicate time specifically to the podcast, and as if I'm actually doing something else. Like, on a lot of podcasts, though, you'll have the really important people call in. Don't be fooled here. This is just because my headphones died. So, don't be fooled. While we both have got a lot of important things going on, nothing is more important than the pod.
Well, I still appreciate you, and I'm sure all the listeners still appreciate you gracing us with your presence. So, thank you, Jordan. But let's get in to the podcast. And the first thing we'll talk about was probably the game of the week, Bedlam, and it ended in heartbreak again for the Cowboys. Ended up falling 62-52. I mean, what I can say about OSU is that they left it all out there. They went down swinging. They threw everything at OU, and at the end they just came up short. But Jordan, there were just this game epitomizes that a few key moments change the complexion of an entire game and change the outcome. And if you don't take advantage of your chances in those few moments, you can't win. Earlier in the game, first play, OSU picks off Baker Mayfield, which luckily that play stood. And then the very next play, Justice Hill runs for a touchdown, and it gets called back for holding, which I didn't see it, but many people said it was a dubious holding call, and you could call that on any receiver anytime they're blocking. But OSU then, they get the short of the stick there, and then they fail to score, only go up 3-0. And then next OU series, I'm sure you've seen this play, Jordan, but the fumble that OSU returned for a touchdown and then wasn't a fumble. Which, what was your opinion on that?
Yeah, based on the video that I saw, it looked like he bobbled it, but eventually gained possession, and then it just slipped out of his hands afterwards. I think there was definitely control for a moment. And he took about 8 or 9 steps, too. And that's including some of the time he bobbled, but I'd say 1 or 2 steps where it looked like he had the ball. So, I would have considered that a fumble, and it was just really interesting. I know that there are a lot of weird calls in this game. I'm not going to say, because I wasn't able to watch the game, unfortunately, but I'm not going to say that it really changed things one thing or the other. You can comment more on that, but I think for that specific play, it looks a lot like a fumble to me.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I mean, of course, I'm a little bit biased, obviously, but I still think, like you said, the guy took 8 or 9 steps with the ball. He was even able to switch hands with it. So for me, it's a fumble any day. But what's most perplexing about it was that they originally called it a fumble on the field. And the fact that they saw that and thought they had indisputable video evidence to overturn the call is just astounding to me.
Yeah, that was definitely, that was the weirdest part of the whole thing. Maybe if they called it on the field as an incomplete pass, I can understand having it stand. I'd still lean on confirming a fumble, but yeah, just a really weird call and a really weird way to start the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If they had called it an incomplete pass on the field, I could have lived with them saying inconclusive, because it was a very close call. But, I mean, in those moments, you have to go with what is called on the field. I mean, that's the letter of the law right there.
For sure.
Yeah, so in a time whenever OSU, through either the ref's fault or their own, should be up 14-0. I think that play was actually a second down, and then the OU ended up punting. But OSU couldn't do anything with it, so should be up 14-0. Then only up, and after all that, only up 3-0, and they couldn't capitalize early. They came out swinging, landed a couple of haymakers, but it turned out they really couldn't get those to matter too much. And then the shootout was on for the rest of the game, and just a great offensive battle. I mean, obviously 38 points scored in the first half. I looked over several times. Just the game was taking forever, just due to all the passing and the reviews. Like, it felt like the first quarter took like an hour and a half. It took about exactly an hour, but I with only about 6 minutes had gone by in the first quarter, and I turned around to to everybody sitting next to me. I was like, this is crazy. There's only 6 minutes gone by. It feels like we've played like a quarter and a half so far. So it's very, felt very odd to start the game, but both offenses starting in, getting into it. And then OSU ended up tying it up at halftime, 38-38. Got the ball to start the second half. Couldn't do anything with it. OU goes and gets a field goal. I think they may have actually gone and scored a touchdown. I'm not sure exactly what happened. I don't have the drive charts. But anyway, OSU can't do anything at first. And then pin inside their own 10-yard line, Mason Rudolph fumbles. Gives OU a short field, and credit to the defense, they were able to stiffen up and only allowed a field goal. But then I think the very next drive, or maybe the drive after that, OSU driving inside OU's 5-yard line with a chance to take the lead, first and goal, and Mason Rudolph, I don't know if you've seen this play or not, but throws one of the most atrocious passes I've ever seen him, and it was just easily intercepted. Threw it in a double coverage to Marcel Aitman. I mean, did you see that play?
Yeah, I did. Wait, was that one of the ones that was eventually taken away from him by Nelly, or did it stand?
No, it stood.
I don't think I did see that one.
No, it stood. This one was, it was like late third quarter, I want to say.
Okay.
I think the score then was 48-45. And, you know, lots of people after the game were daring and after were like, why would Yurcich call a pass play? We've been running the ball great all day, you know. But it came out after the game. That play was actually a run-pass option. So that play, 100% on Mason Rudolph. And I'll get into his performance after the game. But that play was 100% on Rudolph because he had the option to run it or pass it. He chose to pass it instead of doing what you're always taught to do, throw where only your receiver can get it. He threw it just right into the arms of an OU defender. Just horrible, horrible decision and horrible throw.
Yeah.
And OSU was never able to get over the hump and take the lead. And then, Jordan, I have to tell you, this was the most horrendous defensive performance in the Mike Gundy era. I think OU averaged 10.3 yards per play, so they averaged over a first down per play. If you take out all the OSU, to give credit to the OSU defense, they did get sack Baker Mayfield 5 times, which is average of once per game. So the linebackers and D-line were getting after him, but really just the secondary gave up way too many plays, specifically Rodarius Williams. It seemed every time OU would get a big play, he was on the wrong end of it, so... horrible performance by the defense overall, and I've listened at Mike Gundy during his press conference on Monday said that they had the guys in position, like scheme wise, they didn't get beat there. Guys just didn't make plays, and I've read several articles and different tweets from people who are much more knowledgeable about the X and O's, and they said essentially the same thing as that OSU. Any of these plays had guys in the right place at the right time in where they're supposed to be, but for whatever reason, they couldn't make the play, couldn't make an interception or tip the ball away, and OU made them pay for it. For their credit, I mean, Baker Mayfield was slinging the ball everywhere, but what the OSU defense did was they made the plays when they had to. Baker Mayfield and OU driving to put the game away, go up 10 with about 3 minutes to go, and Chad Whitner intercepts him, runs it back about 35 yards. So I understand the defense gave up a ton of points, but they made the big play when it was required, and they put the ball in the offense's hand. And then this was one of the craziest drives I've ever seen. OSU starts driving, and there's I believe this is the play you were referencing earlier, where Mason throws to Keenan Brown, who's double covered. Looks like a poor decision, but it's a perfect throw, and it goes right through Keenan Brown's hands, tipped up, intercepted by Trey Brown of OU. And then, but targeting is called, and a huge review, very long review, and they end up saying that because the targeting stood, and because the targeting occurred before OU intercepted the ball, and because it's an egregious error by the officials to say that the interception or targeting occurred after possession had been changed, they gave the ball back to OSU. Which was the best outcome for OSU? What were your thoughts on that play, going back and watching it after the game?
mean, I think, honestly, I think the targeting did happen before. The interception occurred, and honestly, I think that's the right call there, just to have Oklahoma State get the ball back, because the foul did precede the interception in my eyes.
Yeah, that's what we all thought when we were watching it on the video screens. The question we all had was just, can they even overturn that? Which, thankfully, they were able to. And there was actually a photographer right in front of me and the people I was sitting with, like, waiting to see our reaction after the after they made the announcement of the call, which kind of put some pressure on me to perform after they'd given us the ball back. But anyway, OSU makes it past that and then ends up being in a 4th-and-8 situation. Minute to go. Jordan, I have to say, before the game, if you had said Mason Rudolph has the ball with a minute to go, he's got to make one throw on 4th down. If he makes the throw, OSU wins the game to a wider receiver. I'd say 99% of OSU fans would absolutely take that and say, that's money in the bag, it's going to happen. But 4th down... season on the line, and Mason Rudolph overthrows a wide open Tyron Johnson right in front of me. Actually, I remember watching the play, and I see Mason cock back to throw it, and I look down, and Tyron Johnson has 2 steps on the safety and quarter, and I'm just watching him to see if he's going to be able to make the catch, and all of a sudden I see the ball just bounce 3 yards in front of him, not even able to make an attempt on the ball. And Jordan, I have to say, that's going to be an image that haunts me for a long time. I feel like that's going to be the equivalent of the Brent Celek pass hitting him in between the numbers, and he drops it as time expires to beat OU and Barry Sanders here. But what were your? I'm assuming were you able to see that play?
No, I didn't see that play, but I know what it looks like to have a quarterback overthrow a receiver. Not necessarily with the season on the line, but yeah, that's a heartbreaker for sure. And especially from a guy that makes those throws week in and week out.
Yeah, so I mean, after that, the game's pretty much over. OU went on and scored a running touchdown after that, but to make it look like a wider margin of victory, but it didn't really matter at all. But I have to say, like I said earlier, the defense, statistically, the worst game in the Gundy era, but to give them credit, they made the plays when they had to. They got the stops when they needed to. Intercepted Baker Mayfield twice. And with the season on the line, Mason Rudolph couldn't perform. He couldn't make the throw. He couldn't make the right decisions, which is hugely disappointing, because going into the season, everybody, not just OSU fans, but nationally, had him as a Heisman frontrunner and Heisman favorite. So it's just frustrating for an OSU fan to be so close and have the guy who you thought was going to become a legend, instant legend, right then and there, and he just can't make the throw.
Yeah, I think you put it perfectly, Miles. Big heartbreak, especially from a guy, like you said, that will be a legend, as he broke the passing touchdown record last week, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, he's
record books, and he'll be forever remembered by the Cowboys. And I believe that's a fond memory, but this will definitely sting a little bit. This memory will haunt, like you said, it will haunt Oklahoma State fans for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan, he had his chance to cement himself as the greatest quarterback in OSU history on that throw, and couldn't do it. And you know what? It is what it is. We have to, as an OSU fan, I have to face the facts, which isn't pretty, but it's just a fact that Baker Mayfield was better than Mason on Saturday and is a better player than him in general. And Baker Mayfield, as annoying and douchey as he is probably going to win the Heisman this year.
Yeah, the Heisman doesn't really factor character in. So I would put him as a front runner right now, with Bryce Love not being able to play against Oregon State and then only having 69 yards last week.
Yeah, so very frustrating game for the Cowboys. Season on the line, and I have to say, Jordan, before the season, I believe in our preview pod, I said if OSU doesn't make the college football playoff, it's disappointing, which it they're definitely not going to be able to now, but if they don't win the Big 12, it's an absolute failure of a season. And it, Jordan, it's not even looking like they're going to make it to the Big 12 title game, so, which I, they can still make it, but it's very unlikely. So as of right now, it's looking like, in my eyes, a failure of a season, to be honest. But OSU gets Iowa State on the road this next week. I'm glad it's not Ohio State.
You don't know who you want between those two teams.
Yeah, we'll talk about their game against Iowa in a bit. But what do you see? Do you see the Pokes winning this one, bouncing back after the loss, or are they going to just – what's your perspective? Do you think they'll be demoralized by putting it all out there and coming up just short this last weekend?
Yeah, well, honestly, I think they will be. I would probably take them in this game. I'm not certain about that at this point. But I think they're going to be really down after dropping this game at OU, because this is a very emotional game, and it's hard to gauge how a team's going to respond after a really emotional loss like this, especially since Oklahoma State and OU used to play at the end of the season. This is totally new to them. Their season was almost always depended on Bedlam, whether that was going to put them into a BCS bowl now, whether it was going to put them into a playoff. I'm not sure how they're really going to respond here. And this is really the turning point, or could be the turning point in the season. I don't think this OU game is necessarily a turning point, but if Oklahoma State drops this game to Iowa State, then you can definitely say that this season is a failure. Because they should easily win those last two games, regardless of emotional highs or emotional lows. But this is a game that they really have if they want to make a bowl of significance based on their preseason expectation.
Yep, and I don't know. I feel like OSU is going to either win in a nail biter or they're just going to get blown out. I would hope they win, but we'll see. Like I said, the chances of them getting into the Big 12 title game are very slim. They'd need, like right now, it's looking like it's going to be a rematch of the OU TCU game coming up, and they'll need the loser of that game to lose again. So if OU loses, they'll need OU to lose to West Virginia, and if TCU loses, they'll need TCU to lose to Texas Tech. Which both, I guess, could happen, but looking unlikely. So we'll see. Maybe the Pokes get into the title game through the back door. I'm not sure. But let's talk about OU versus TCU coming up this weekend. Huge game, playoff, and Big 12 title ramifications. What are you expecting from the Sooners and the Horned Frogs?
Yeah, Mom, I think Baker Mayfield's going to further cement his Heisman candidacy and the fact that he's really in the forefront. I've honestly not been super impressed with TCU. They're one of those teams kind of, and of course whenever I say this, you're going to think, well, they won the national championship last year, but they kind of look like Clemson did in the regular season, TCU does, and that they aren't blowing a whole lot of teams away, but they're winning some close ones, having a lot of mistakes in the regular season. So maybe if they make it to the playoffs, they'll scare some people, but I think OU, just as hot as they are right now, putting together, honestly, two complete offensive games, still some flaws in the defense, of course, but two complete offensive games. I think Oklahoma wins this one at home, and I think they're going to stroll into the playoffs.
Stroll in, wow. Strong words. I think I'd have to agree with you. I'm going to take OU in this game. Baker Mayfield is coming on fire for them just at the right time for a Sooner fans perspective. And in the press conference this week, he was pleading with the Sooner fans to make it a rowdy environment and get loud and make it a tough place to play for the Horned Frogs. So I bet those fans are going to be up in arms and ready to get after those TCU players. So it's going to be a very hostile environment. I expect it to be a very good game, but ultimately I see OU coming out on top as well. Jordan, we almost had two heartbroken fans on the pod for slightly different reasons, but Jordan, your Hogs left it late against Coastal Carolina and ended up pulling out the victory, but by a very slim margin, 1 point to be exact, 38-39, Arkansas beat Coastal Carolina, who had one win coming into this game. Can you just summarize the what happened during this game and your thoughts of thoughts about what this means moving forward for the Hogs?
Well, Miles, let me just point one thing out real quick. Arkansas State played Coastal Carolina earlier this year and won 51-17. Arkansas State is not even, they're not a relevant school in the state of Arkansas, whenever you think of athletics. Arkansas does not even get touched by Arkansas State. So the fact that we were barely able to eke out a victory over Coastal Carolina, that's going to be something that Arkansas State points to and says, we were able to beat them by 34. You guys can barely sneak out a victory. And honestly, it's warranted. I'm not sure that this Arkansas team could beat Arkansas State this year, as sad as that is. I mean, Arkansas State is playing pretty well so far. And Arkansas is not. It's as simple as that. The craziest part of this, and there's really, no matter who's playing in the game, because whenever Coastal Carolina plays Arkansas, Arkansas should win 100 times out of 100 times, no question about it. But in this game, we knocked out their starting quarterback, who, granted, was honestly like one of the worst quarterbacks I've seen all game. He couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. He couldn't hit the ocean on a boat. And we knocked him out of the game, and the backup comes in, and he's a dual threat. He's throwing dimes, and he didn't throw a whole lot, but whenever he did, there were easy completions to wide open receivers, right in stride, perfectly timed. And so I think our defense really failed us in this game. Our best player got thrown out for, in my opinion, a pretty bad targeting call. But even if your best player gets thrown out, you know, even if you're playing entirely second-team defense, it should be a pretty comfortable game still because we've got better athletes and better coaches, you would think, than the Coastal Carolina team does. I'm going to pat the back of the offense. I think they did a pretty good job. If you put up 39 points at home, there's no way you should lose. And I'm sorry. That's the case across the board. I know Oklahoma State played a really good offense, and there's some grace there. But whenever you're playing a 1-8 team that hasn't looked the part whatsoever the entire year, there's quite a bit less grace in that scenario. Honestly, I'm not going to go into depth so much on this game, just because it was a lot of back and forth and turnovers that really hurt us, turnovers that turned into scores for Coastal Carolina. But the craziest part, every time T.J. Hammond touched the ball, he's a guy that everyone knew coming out of high school and they've seen him in practice. Everyone knows that he's a very talented kid. I think he's in Brett Bielema's doghouse for some reason because he does not seem to get enough touches. And we gave him a few touches in this game. He had 7 carries for 119 yards. He broke off an 88-yard touchdown run whenever we were down. I think we were down 13 at the time. I want to say it was 38-25 whenever he broke off this touchdown run. And it was almost all looking lost at this point. That he ran that touchdown in. And there's a little bit more life in the Hogs. He also had a screen, a 60-yard screen for a touchdown. And he's able to make moves in the open field that not a lot of guys in college football can. He's just very talented. The fact that he's not getting playing time is baffling. Brett Bielema was asked after the game if T.J. Hammonds is going to get more touches in this next game. Or if he regretted not playing T.J. these first 2 years that he's been here, whether it was when he was a freshman or redshirt freshman, I believe. I believe he got redshirted. If not, then he might even be a junior now. But if he regretted it, and he said, you know, we don't take negative thoughts here. We're just glad that he's coming along now at this point in the season. That's just the biggest load of bull crap I've ever heard. This is a guy he's been just as talented from the moment he was in high school, or he was in his senior year in high school to this moment. He's got all the talent in the world. They just have not known how to utilize him. They've moved him all over the place. He was even a wide receiver last year. And he didn't get any playing time. So the fact that he has been on the bench, not getting any playing time, it's just an egregious coaching error, and I think that sums up the Brett Bielema era. Because you know what, Miles? We could have freaking Darren McFadden on the bench somewhere, and we wouldn't even know, because Brett Bielema's not going to put him in the game. Danny Enos isn't going to put him in the game. We could have some very talented athletic guys that you look at the tape and you see these are some of the best players athletically that Arkansas has had in the last decade, and they don't see the field. And it doesn't seem like it's off the field issues. If it is, we don't hear about it. But Miles, I think this sums up the Brett Bielema era pretty perfectly. And you know what? I'm going to throw out a name for the next Arkansas coach, because I'll go ahead and say this game sealed Brett Bielema's fate. If you had lost this game, you would have been fired on the field. Since he won this game barely, he's bought himself until the end of the season. Just because we're not going to be able to hire a coach midseason that we're looking at. None of those coaches will leave their program midseason. But if he lost this game, he would have been fired and we wouldn't have cared. So I'm going to throw out a coach's name. I want to hear your thoughts because I think this is a really interesting hire. And honestly, I think it's incredibly likely. Gus Malzahn coming to Arkansas.
Really? Luring him away from the Auburn Tigers.
I don't think Auburn likes him. You see all over the place, people are just so frustrated with him. I think he's ready to come back to Arkansas. I mean, he was a coach at Chapel Christian, which is a school in Arkansas, a high school. He was the coach at Arkansas State. So he's got significant Arkansas ties. He loves the state. And I think he's got a lot of – he was obviously the offensive coordinator in the Houston Nutt era. So he's been a coach at Arkansas. He knows the expectations that are here. And you know what? Arkansas fans would be perfectly happy if we had the season Auburn has been having lately. The Auburn fans, because they're not making the playoff, are disappointed year in and year out. So, Miles, I want to hear your thoughts. Guess Malzahn for Arkansas. What's the likelihood, and do you think he's a good fit?
Well, I think if you guys were able to land him, that would be an absolutely—that would just be a coup. Like, that would be an incredible job by Jeff Long and the athletic department to bring him back in. Now, how likely that is, I'd probably say it doesn't seem very likely to me at all, to be perfectly honest, just because granted, they haven't really been fighting for the SEC title the last few years, but they're also going up against a Alabama program, which is in the midst of a historic run, something we haven't seen for a very long time in college football. So I feel like it'd be hard to lure him away just because he's having success there, and I don't think the administration there wants to get rid of him, but you never know. Maybe if Arkansas comes with enough money, if they can pony up the cash, maybe they'll be able to get him away. What would you put your percentages as that you guys could lure him back to Arkansas?
Miles, I'm going to be honest. I think it makes the most sense out of anybody I've ever heard. Or not anybody I've ever heard. Out of anyone in this coaching carousel so far, in this upcoming offseason, I think it makes the most sense out of anyone. Honestly, I put it at 70% that he comes to Arkansas. I think it's pretty likely because he's not happy at Auburn. The fans are constantly getting after him. And I may be wrong, but I don't think he does get along with some of the administration at Auburn. I think there have been some conflicts there, if I remember correctly. So I think that we do snag Gus Malzahn this offseason and Brett Lashley, because they're really a package deal. I think we get those guys, and the future of Razorback football will look much brighter in that case because of the system that he runs. And the fact that you can really plug anybody in and it works.
Yeah, well, Auburn is playing, has the number one and number two ranked team. They're playing the number one and number two ranked team in the next 2 out of 3 weeks. So it's very likely that they're going to be finishing 8-4. Will that be enough to get him fired? Don't know, or to have people discontent with him enough to let him walk, who knows, but I think that would be great for Arkansas. I think that would immediately get the fans fired up. and passionate about Arkansas football again, bringing in a proven winner and somebody who can compete in the SEC year in and year out. Not to say that hiring an up-and-comer wouldn't get people excited, but you know, getting somebody who's proven they can win is a big deal. So I'd be very happy for if I was an Arkansas fan if you guys were able to land him.
Yeah, I honestly think it's pretty probable. Like I said, it's those Arkansas ties that I think make sense and bring him back. And Miles, I don't think he'll necessarily be fired. I think he'll leave on his own accord. I know that's a very bold statement, but I just, the more I think about it, the more I look into it, I feel that that's pretty likely.
Oh, let me look up his contract real quick, see if he is signed at Auburn through 2020. So that would be a sizable buyout if he decided to walk himself or if Arkansas tried to go in and buy out his contract for him. But
I think Arkansas would buy out his contract.
Yeah.
I think that's the most likely. And I just want to let all of you listeners know, trying to figure out how to do this. So I'm about to change Gus Malzahn head coach status to Arkansas. here we go. Edit. Start editing. So create an account. There we go. What should I name the account name, Miles?
You're creating an account? How about Brett Bielema out?
Brett Bielema out.
Or Bielema out.
Feel them out. I'll go with that. Yeah, so just to let you guys know, this is happening live. Feel them out. Password. I'm not going to say the password.
You could be like Equifax and make your password password.
Yes.
Very secure.
You know how well that worked out. And I'll send this tomorrow so we get some updates. I'll send this to the Joe Collins email.
Perfect.
And
yeah, everybody,
whenever you hear this podcast, you need to go and see, go to Gus Malzahn's Wikipedia page and see if it's still changed. Because the hope is that it will be. And I'll, as we continue along this podcast, I'll have that working in the background. I'll let you guys know whenever it's officially changed.
Perfect. Yeah, that once again, everybody, you're listening live to Jordan making a change for the Arkansas and Gus Malzahn Wikipedia pages, trying to make his dream come true through Wikipedia.
And hopefully it gets seen somewhere. Yeah, and I can post on social media.
Yeah, we need to get this viral.
Assuming you don't get in trouble for doing this, so I'll probably just suspend my account or something.
We'll see, but yeah, keep us updated on that as we're going along, but let's move on to who crapped the bed this week, and Jordan, it has to be Ohio State University. After getting a huge win over Penn State, putting them in the driver's seat to make the playoff out of the Big Ten, they go on and get their doors blown off by Iowa. Iowa, of all people. They let the Iowa Hawkeyes put up 55 on them. An Iowa team that has looked less than inspiring in many of their games, losing to Northwestern, barely squeaking out a win against Minnesota, losing to Michigan State, lost a close one to Penn State, but not a great loss on Ohio State, and it probably eliminates them from the playoff, and they didn't really put up a fight in this one.
Yeah, I told you this before we started recording. So I thought that they had mixed up the scores on the scoreboard, because I can't remember the last time that Auburn put up their Auburn. Sorry, I'm still thinking about Gus Malzahn. I can't remember the last time Iowa put up 55 points in a game. I was just shocked, especially coming off of a game where they beat arguably a playoff contender at that point in the season. So just really shocking to me that they weren't able to even look respectable in that game. I believe the real JT Barrett was shown, and honestly, that's got to knock them out of playoff contention. The Big Ten is really beating itself up. They're going to have to hope that Wisconsin wins out if they want a chance for anybody to get to the playoff. Because Wisconsin's schedule is so weak that if they lose that Big Ten championship game, I don't necessarily see them making it to the playoff. So you're potentially looking at the Pac-12 getting left out entirely and the Big Ten getting left out entirely, leaving the door open for the SEC, Big 12, or ACC, and maybe even an outsider but for those three major conferences to potentially get two guys in, or for a team like UCF to sneak somebody into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's not looking good for the Big Ten. Because Wisconsin, although they have been winning, like you said, they have a really weak schedule, and they haven't been, aside from Indiana this last week, they haven't really been blowing people out and winning convincingly. So, yeah, I mean, Penn State, you'd have to say Penn State and Ohio State are out of the conversation there. And depending on how it shapes out in the Big 12, we could be looking at two SEC teams, Notre Dame and maybe somebody from the ACC, depending on how that shakes out. So, we're in an interesting spot with the playoff.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to give an update real quick. I'm not sure that I am going to be able to change this, just because it's looking like they're pretty serious about keeping things correct. But if someone else wants to risk it and change it, please feel free. I would encourage it.
Are you getting some sort of error on that?
No error. It just said that I had to agree to a Creative Commons license, to a Creative Commons type act something, and then some license that is probably going to get upset with me. And I don't necessarily want podcast evidence that I had done that, so I exited out. But I'm going to encourage somebody else to do it, if you're willing.
There you have it, folks. Arkansas fans don't want Gus Malzahn enough to change his Wikipedia page. So there you see, confirming that they won't be getting Gus Malzahn this offseason.
I guess so.
Can't change the Wikipedia page.
I think we signed through with a Kirk Ferentz contract to get him through 2087.
Yeah. He only has to win 4 games a year to get another year of guaranteed money.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. But, yeah, Mom, like you said, it is looking like a very odd playoff picture. You're going to have a lot of teams with a loss. At least I don't think there's been a team that has gone undefeated all year in the playoff, has there?
Alabama went undefeated into the playoff last year and then lost the title game, and Clemson was undefeated.
I get through the whole playoff. Like, I don't think there's been a team that hasn't lost the game.
Yeah, there's been no 15-0 or 14-0 team at the end of the season so far.
Yeah, so I think that's very likely to stay the same this year unless a team like Alabama, Georgia, or maybe if the UCF slips in, and then I guess Wisconsin, but not a lot of teams making a strong case for just total dominance.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Penn State being eliminated from the playoff conversation this week. Lost in what has to be a stunner, 27-24. Penn State was pretty heavily favored. And this game was on weather delay for a very long time. But Michigan State ended up pulling it out. What were your thoughts? I mean, Penn State were your boys before the season, Jordan. You had them going all the way. So what's happened to the Nittany Lions the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think it's just come down to not performing against them. Oh, sorry, I dropped my phone. I think it's just, it's come down to not performing in crunch time. I mean, they've lost their last 2 games with a combined 4 points. Miles, I wouldn't necessarily exclude them from playoff contention. It's definitely out of their hands. There's going to have to be a lot of stuff that happens, but I easily see them winning out the rest of the season. I think there's a good chance that either Michigan State or Ohio State could lose again. putting Penn State in the driver's seat in the East. And if they beat Wisconsin and a little bit of other craziness goes down throughout the other conferences, I wouldn't necessarily exclude them. We'll see tonight. We're recording on Tuesday night. We'll see tonight where they lie in the playoff rankings. But if they really dominate their competition, I wouldn't count them out yet. But these last 2 weeks, I think it just comes down to not being able to perform in crunch time, like I said. Having chances, being in games, and not being able to close it out. And that's really been characteristic of how they've played on the road, on the whole, I guess, with them barely escaping against Iowa on the road. And same with Ohio State, playing a close game but not being able to escape that time. And we see it again in East Lansing, 27-24. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's something with Trace McSorley just getting shaken up. We know the offensive line is a little shaky as they were exposed against Ohio State. But Trace McSorley having three costly turnovers in such a close game, that really hurt them. My boys are definitely, they're going to have a lot of help outside of them just winning the rest of their games. At this point, I'm not putting them in the playoff for sure. But really, just a great effort by Michigan State, and probably the most improved, maybe next to Iowa State, it'd be an interesting conversation there, but possibly the most improved team year to year, or from last year to this year. Just in the fact that they're now in the driver's seat in the Big Ten, or tied, I guess. And this game, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but this game coming up this weekend will definitely submit one team and put them in the driver's seat.
Yeah, I mean, I believe they went 3-9 last year.
Yeah, 3-9.
3-9. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I'd say definitely between them and Iowa State on who had the best bounce back year, I guess you could say. And before the season, lots of people were saying, you know, it's not going to get any better for Michigan State. They've got tons of young guys still, not a lot of experience. But Mark D'Antonio showing why he's a great coach and why the Spartan faithful should continue to support him and get behind him with a very strong performance, knocking off Michigan and Penn State so far. They get a chance to complete the trifecta and beat Ohio State in the shoe this next week. So great year by the Spartans so far.
Yeah, and if Ohio State drops to 7th somehow in the rankings, they have a chance to beat their third ranked 7th team this year. So maybe it's the magic of the 7th that they really enjoy.
Well, I'm sure they'll be hoping for magic number 7, lucky number 7 again. All right, let's talk for a little bit about NC State versus Clemson. Clemson holding on to its playoff hopes this year, and they were able to get the W 38-31 in the hostile crowd at NC State. Wolfpack, they're a good team this year, but they just haven't been able to beat the big teams in the ACC so far.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that they've suffered plenty of injuries on the defensive front and to their star running back, Nyheim Hines. He wasn't able to play in this game, which I believe really hurt their chances. He's arguably their best offensive player. Ryan Finley is really good, too, but if you don't have a running game, it makes it really tough on your quarterback. So losing Nyheim Hines last week did not help, as I said. And Clemson really just game-managed their way to a victory here. On the road, NC State wanted a revenge game. Because Clemson won that game last year, didn't they?
Yeah, NC State should have won. Had a few chances late to win.
Missed that field goal. Missed
a chip shot. Right. Their kicker, Amendola, the field goal and missed the chip shot.
Amendola and Cole Headland. Still hanging out, by the way. Teaching each other how to kick the ball.
Yep.
They wanted a revenge game at home. Would have been very satisfying for the fans and could have given them a chance to be in a really good position to win, I believe, the Coastal. them a really good chance to win the Atlantic Division. But now Clemson controls their own destiny. And really, you got to give credit to Dabo. Having a quarterback in Kelly Bryant that's played well all year for the most part, coming in and struggling a little bit in this game, and he really knows how to just coach to a victory, it seems like. Whether your team's playing well or playing poorly, he finds a way to make sure that you're coaching to a victory, and it doesn't all depend on a Lamar Jackson-type effort.
Yeah, for sure. So Clemson keeps on rolling. At this point, if they're able to win out and win the ACC, they're definitely into the title game. And I think this was, let me check their schedule real quick, but off the top of my head, this was their last big test.
Yeah, they've got Florida State, the Citadel, and then they go, and a dangerous game, actually. They do go to Columbia, South Carolina, who's been sneaky good this year. Not great, but sneaky good, and they're looking to be 8-3 going into that game. They have Florida, who's looked awful, and Wofford right before they play Clemson. So it'll be an interesting matchup in the end of the season. They might get a low-ranked South Carolina team.
Yeah, I mean, South Carolina has proven they're dangerous. They didn't get blown. They lost by two touchdowns to Georgia this week, but they didn't get blown out. So if Clemson starts looking ahead to that ACC title game against maybe against Miami possibly, or if they fall apart Virginia Tech, then they may slip up. But with that being a rivalry game, I'd expect them to take care of business. But you never know. But at the moment, it's looking like it's going to come down to the ACC title game to determine who's going to go into the playoff from the ACC.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't believe that Clemson and Miami play in the regular season. So if that result stands, that they will easily send somebody to the playoff.
Yeah.
Whether it or Clemson. So the ACC is looking really good right now. The SEC, same way. I think the Big 12 can be confident that they'll send one. But aside from that, there's a lot of parity in college football.
No, it's a very exciting season because of that. Nobody really able to take, well, Alabama, of course, but nobody's looking infallible or completely dominant. So it's setting up to be a great end of the season. Well, let's talk about the other battle in the ACC this week in Miami, where the University of Miami dispatched Virginia Tech 28-10, game that wasn't really close. Jordan, these were the guys I predicted to win their division. And in our preseason podcast, we said the ACC division crown is going to, I don't remember whether they're in the Coastal or Atlantic. It doesn't really matter, but they're in the Coastal. Yeah. We said the division crown was going to come down to this game, and it's looking like it's going to. And, I just want to tell you, I told you so. I told you Miami was going to win this game and win the division.
Hey, who do you have winning the conference, Miles?
I did have Florida State winning the conference.
All right. I just want to remind you of that real quick. Well, feeling yourself a little bit. yeah, hey, good call. Miami's defense is legit. I didn't expect them to be able to shut down Josh Jackson completely, and they really did. The first several drives, they were able to do anything. And even on drives where Virginia Tech looked good, Miami was able to stop them whenever they needed to, only giving up one touchdown in this game. I'm still not a believer in the Miami offense whatsoever. They've been pretty poor. But their defense has been so good that I just don't see anyone else beating them this year for the rest of the regular season. I think they go into the Clemson game, and that's a very dangerous game. I might even take Miami in that game. They've impressed me so much lately. So, I'm very impressed by your pick, Miles. Great preseason pick, and it's held together even late into the season.
Yeah, I've got this conference 50% right. It's looking like. Yeah, so like I said just now, it's looking like it's shaping up to be a Clemson versus Miami game in the title, and possibly a quarterfinal to the playoff, essentially, in that ACC title game. All right, let's move on to the SEC. Alabama versus LSU. Alabama continued their recent dominance over the Tigers, winning 24-10. Jordan, I'll ask you because you're more in tune with the SEC, but what's your opinion of this game, and do you think that anybody has a chance of beating Alabama the rest of this year?
Absolutely. I think Alabama's honestly the most vulnerable they've been in the last couple of years. Their defense isn't as dominant as it has been, and the offense is showing some weaknesses as well. Jalen Hurts is the best passer. He can make plays, but you really, whenever you've got him in the pocket, he doesn't deliver on the money quite too often. So I think Georgia's got a great chance to beat them, and anyone they face in the playoff, I'm not going to say that Alabama's easily just going to win any of those games. LSU had more total yards in this game than Alabama did. So that's one thing about a Nick Saban coach team at all, and especially since he's been at Alabama. They don't have to have the most yards to win the game. They find ways to win. So that's the dangerous part of any Nick Saban coach team, or specifically in this Alabama dynasty era, an Alabama coach, or an Alabama team. I do want to bring up something, though, Wiles. I saw an interesting thing on Twitter. You know who the last coach to beat Alabama by, I believe, either 7 or no, by 14 points was?
By 14 points. I'd have to go, probably Urban Meyer.
It's Nick Saban. Nick Saban was the last coach to beat Alabama by 14. I think it was 14. 14 points, whenever he was the coach at LSU.
Oh, really? What was the... I'll have to check the score in their semifinal game. I thought Ohio State had won more by that. Won that game by more.
It may have been 17 or something like that, but... yeah, he's the last coach to beat them by a significant amount. I'll check that as well.
Yeah, I'm looking here. That was 35-42, only a touchdown win. So, yeah, wow, that is shocking. That is really surprising because Alabama wasn't exactly great before he came in there. So. That I have to say, I'm pretty surprised by that.
Yeah. So it goes to show you that the only person that knows how to beat Alabama convincingly is the man leading the team now and the man leading the dynasty. So, Miles, I don't see anyone in the regular season beating Alabama. I think it will come down to the SEC championship. And if Alabama is able to sneak past Georgia, I think there's a very real chance that... But this playoffs is quite a bit of insanity, and Alabama loses, and you might even get a 3 or 4 winning another title like Ohio State did in that year that you mentioned.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy. Lots of parity this year, like we said. All right, let's review our upset from this last week. Jordan, I went with Indiana over Wisconsin, and Indiana looked good early. They shot out to a 10-0 lead, and I was feeling pretty good about myself, just like with my Miami pick. Unfortunately, they were then outscored 45-7 the rest of the game. So they kind of stopped playing there. But in your pick, Western Kentucky over Vandy, it looked like the Hilltoppers played them close, but Vandy was just able to pull away late.
Yeah, it seemed like conservative play calling is what did Western Kentucky in, which is not their style at all. So I was disappointed in that game. And you know what, Balls? I think we're both ready to bounce back with some two high-profile upset picks.
Yeah. All right, Jordan, let's hear yours. I'll let you go first.
Yeah, so after a week where I was thoroughly impressed by one team and incredibly just in shock by the effort of another, I've got Michigan State beating Ohio State this weekend. I think they've got a really great chance to do it. They aren't flashy. Nothing screams that their athletes are better. Nothing screams that they've got the best shot in the world. But honestly, they just execute. And I think there's been a real lack of execution, as you can see by a 31-point loss this last week to Iowa by Ohio State. So I'm taking the Spartans. And honestly, this might be the most comfortable I've felt about a pick this season.
Wow, even as a 15.5 point dog, you're feeling really good about it.
Let me put a disclaimer. I mean, for an upset pick. Specifically for an upset pick. This is probably the most confident I felt just because of the way they've been playing lately.
Yeah, I think it's a good pick, Jordan. I'm sticking in the Big Ten. What I've realized, I think it's a requirement that one of us has to pick a Big Ten team to get upset. It seems like they're in there every week.
Yeah, with our streak of Iowa being upset.
Yeah. Jordan, but I'm breaking the golden rule of the podcast, Jordan. I'm not picking Iowa to be upset. I'm picking Iowa to upset somebody else. That's right, I'm taking Iowa over Wisconsin.
Wow.
A 12.5 point dog, which... is shocking. I feel like that's shocking after the beatdown they put on Ohio State. Now, will they win? I don't know, but at 12.5, I like Iowa's chances.
Yeah. Honestly, Miles, that looks like a pretty good pick. Unfortunately for you, on this pick, the shock factor does go away. I think Wisconsin is definitely on alert, knowing that Iowa is a solid team. So I think Iowa does have a really good chance, especially after just dismantling and dismembering all of the Ohio State players, it seems like. I think that's a good pick, but it's got to be tough for sure. I'm confident in your ability to pick an upset though, Miles, and I may have to ride with you on that one.
Sounds good. Let's move on. We'll take a look at a few games. This weekend, oops, I didn't change that. But let's talk about this one, a huge game with playoff implications. If Notre Dame at Miami, College Game Day is going to be there. If Notre Dame loses this one, they're definitely out of the playoff. If Miami loses it, they have to win out to get in, and even then, maybe not because they haven't been really convincing in their other wins. Notre Dame, of course, is a very run-first team, and it's looking like it's going to be a very rainy, sloppy game. What do you think is gonna happen here?
Yeah, I want to correct myself. I don't know if I said earlier that I didn't think Miami would lose for the rest of the year. I've been in conference. I didn't think they'd get knocked out of the driver's seat in their division. It'd be really hard at this point. On that note, I've got Notre Dame. I really think, like you said, the rainy conditions are going to bode very well for Notre Dame. And Josh Adams, who's really been flying under the radar, but is having a quietly incredible season, honestly, right at 1,200 yards, 8.5 yards a carry. So I've got Josh Adams and Brandon Wimbush.
Yeah.
I've got Josh Adams and Brandon Wimbush to really lead a Notre Dame offense to victory here behind one of the best I'll go ahead and say it, the best offensive line in college football.
Wow.
And this is against a defense that's probably one of the best defenses, I'd say a top five defense in the country. But I think the Notre Dame's offense, their offensive prowess, specifically on the offensive line and with the talent they have at running back, I think that's going to push them over the top against an anemic Miami defense that's going to be going, or sorry, anemic Miami offense that's going to be going against a slightly above average Notre Dame defense.
Yeah, I think I'd have to ride with you on this one. I think the weather conditions, if they're as bad as they might be. They definitely play into the Fighting Irish's hand with their run game. And I have to say, I've been very impressed. I thought that Notre Dame might be a little bit overrated, and I thought they might struggle or even lose against NC State and Wake Forest, but they've put both of those teams away fairly convincingly, and neither of them have been really close. And meanwhile, Miami, though they did win big against Virginia Tech and win convincingly, they haven't looked convincing at all in their other games. So I just think Notre Dame is going to be, I think it's going to be a good game, but I think Notre Dame is overall too good, too consistent, and I think Miami is going to drop this one, which doesn't help, it doesn't hurt them in the conference, but does hurt the chances potentially at a playoff spot.
For sure. And for those of you that keep up with injury updates and stuff like that, you'll probably know this by the time you hear the podcast, but at this point we weren't sure. Brian Kelly, a couple hours ago, did say that Brandon Wimbush and Josh Adams are healthy. They're ready to go. So that looks good for Notre Dame. And Miles, like you said, I think I'm going to have to record Notre Dame on this one.
All right, let's talk about this game and we'll wrap it up, Jordan. Number one, Georgia at number 14, Auburn. We talked about Gus Malzahn earlier. Big game. Do you think the Tigers have a chance of pulling the upset here?
Yeah, I think based on Malzahn's coaching style, I think they got a shot, and I think they'll make it competitive. I'm going to have to go with Georgia in this one. I think the rushing game is just too dominant, and their defense has been excellent all year. So I'm still going to go with Georgia until they prove me wrong. I think they're going to pull it out.
Yeah, definitely going to be Georgia's biggest test since that away game at Notre Dame. Of course, Auburn is not an elite team this year. They're a very good team, but not an elite team. I wouldn't be surprised to see Georgia go down here, but with how strong they've looked in all their other games, I think you really can't pick against them at this point in time. So I'd have to go with Kirby Smart and the Dogs as well.
Yeah. And real quick, Miles, before we end the podcast, I realized I didn't cover the Arkansas-LSU game, so I'll just say something real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Arkansas always seems to play, aside from last year, always seems to give LSU a game. I don't see that happening this year, though. I think this is going to be a repeat of last year. Darius Geis has a coming out party. Now, everyone knows that he's one of the better running backs in the country. But I think, honestly, Miles, he might run for 250 yards on us on Saturday. And I'll be at work week into the Wesley, so I won't be able to watch the game, which I'm a little disappointed about that. And Mom and Dad, if you're listening, which I know you do, can you please record the game? And this is a test to see if you listen to the podcast all the way through. If you record the game so I can watch it, then I'll know that you listen to the podcast all the way through. But I just don't see us pulling out the game. As much as I want us to beat LSU because they're our rival, it just doesn't seem too likely based on how we played lately. It'd be hard for anyone to pick us after the Coastal Carolina game. But, Miles, your prediction's still alive for us to go 6-6. I don't see it. I'm still going to stick with 4-8, and I'm sure you would adjust after the fact, after this last weekend. But I'm going to have to say that Arkansas drops this game and further cements Brett Bielema's destiny.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's possible Arkansas gets to a bowl game, but the that performance against the Chanticleers of Coastal Carolina has not emboldened me whatsoever. So LSU is not nearly up to their usual standard as a national title or SEC title contender, but they're still pretty good this year. And I as much as it pains me to say, I see them taking the victory over the Hogs.
Yeah, if it pains you, Miles, imagine how much it pains me.
Yeah, definitely. All right, that's going to wrap up this week of Joe College Radio. Once again, thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on iTunes, leave us a rating. SoundCloud, give us a like. Been a heartbreaking weekend for me, but I'm still recovering, slowly getting back up to 100%, ready for another ride this weekend for the Cowboys. Jordan, I know you can't watch the LSU game this week for Arkansas, but best of luck to your boys this weekend.
Yeah, thank you so much. Real quick, what time is your game?
It's 11 a.m.
Okay, that's what I thought. Same as ours. So, Bob, if you want to flip back and forth, feel free. Give me some updates if you want. But, yeah, good luck to your boys as they travel to Ames.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do. Thank you for Stephen Pengestu for editing the podcast this week. I'm sure you have been celebrating the OU victory fervently. I don't know about that, but you do a great job as always. So thank you. Appreciate you, Stephen. But that's going to wrap it up. This is Miles King, Jordan Linderman, and Joe College Radio signing off.